The shir tonight is on this week's parsha, Parshas Miketz. The title of the shir is Yehuda's Rolling Bones. I want to wish everybody a happy Hanukkah, and the shir is going to be about the parsha. There's a gemara that takes up the bones of Yehuda after he died, that it was shaking, it was rolling. We're going to try to explain it, but it's tied into an argument made in this week's parsha. So the beginning of the shir is going to address the difference between the argument of Reuven and the argument of Yehuda in trying to convince Yaakov to take Binyamin to Mitzrayim in order to save them, in order to get food. And there are two different arguments being made, and Reuven's argument is rejected by Yaakov, but Yehuda's argument is accepted by Yaakov. And once we explain the nature of the arguments, this Gemara, which explains and tries to give an explanation for Yehuda's bones in the coffin in the Midbar, I think it'll come to life and it'll be explained properly. So let's start from Bereishis Perek Mem Beis Pasuk Lamed Vav. I'm going to read it inside. It's source number one. It says, Vayomer Alehem Yaakov Avihem Osi Shikaltem Yosef Einenu V'Shimon Einenu V'Es Binyamin Tikachu Alai Hayu Chulana. Now, background information. This is after they had already gone down, all the brothers, to get food the first time, and Shimon was retained by Yosef in the jail, and Binyamin and Yosef, obviously, he was sold earlier. Yaakov is saying to the other brothers, the rest of the brothers, that you've bereaved me. Osishi kaltem, Yosef isn't here, he's gone. Shimon isn't here, and Binyamin, you're going to take, all these troubles have come upon me. Alai hayu chulana. Vayomer, now Reuven steps up. Vayomer Reuven el aviv, lemor, Eshne banai tamis, imlo avienu elecha, tina oso al yadi, vaani ashivenu elecha. Reuven says to his father that you can kill my two sons, or my two sons will die, if I don't bring Binyamin back to you. Give him to me, and I'll bring him back to you. Vayomer lo yered bini machem. Yaakov says, no, that's not going to happen. Ki achiv meis v'hu levado nishar, ukra'ohu ason baderech asher telchu ba. V'horatem es sevasi biagon sha'ola. Yaakov says that to Reuven's argument, no, that I'm not going to let Binyamin go down with you, lest something happen to him on the way, and he's the only one left. Hula vado nishar. What will happen? V'horatem es sevasi biagon sha'ola, which means that he'll go into the grave in sorrow and in pain. So there are the three psukim just describe a conversation between Yaakov and Reuven. Yaakov is upset because Shimon was retained by Yosef, and Yosef isn't there, so he's left with all the other brothers. Reuven tries to make an argument. Listen, trust me, I'll let my two children die if I don't bring them back to you. And then Yaakov rejects the argument. He says, first of all, because Binyamin is alone, and lest something happen to him on the derech, and what will happen to Yaakov as a result if something happened to Binyamin, that he would go into the grave biagon, with sorrow. Now, what's strange about this sequence? We have to understand the nature of Reuven's argument. What is his argument? And why does Yaakov reject Reuven's argument? That's the basic question. But in the rejection of Reuven's argument, in Lamed Ches, Yaakov mentions a couple points. One is, Ki achiv meis v'hu levado nishar, that his brother died and he is alone. So why does that matter to Yaakov? You would think that if something were to happen to any of his children, his sons, then it would bother him and it would create a tremendous depression amongst him. But he says over here, he points out v'hu levado nishar, that he is the only one left standing. So why does he mention that? And what's this end part? V'horatem esivasi biagon sha'ola. What is Yaakov telling Reuven, that if something happens to Binyamin, that he'll go to the grave in sorrow? What does that mean, that he'll go to the grave in sorrow? Why is he making that point? Wouldn't you just say that it should mean that Yaakov would be upset? He would be depressed. He wouldn't know how to deal with it. What does it mean that he'll go to the grave in sorrow? Why mention that? So those are the smaller points that I want to take up in the shir. But the main question is the nature of Reuven's argument and Yaakov's rejection of that argument. Let's look at number two. And it's Rashi. Rashi says, Osishi kaltem, milamed shechashtan shemahargu omachru ki Yosef. This teaches you that Yaakov was suspicious of the brothers, and they thought that maybe they would kill Binyamin just like omachru ki Yosef, or they would sell Binyamin like Yosef. Shikaltem kol mi shebanav avudim karei shikol shakul. Sorry, everyone, anybody whose children dies, they're called the shakul, and that's what Yaakov is saying. Osi shikaltem, you've bereaved me. You left me without children. Lo yared bnei machem lamed ches. This is really the Rashi that I want to focus on. Lo kibal dvarav shel Reuven. He did not accept the argument of Reuven. Why not? Amar bechor shote huzeh. This bechor Reuven, he's a fool. Who Omer Laham is Banov? He is saying that if he doesn't bring Binyamin back, his children will be killed. The Chibanov Haim Velo Banai, are they just his children and not my children as well? Meaning to say that Yaakov, he loved his grandchildren. He wouldn't want his grandchildren to die. So his breakdown of Reuven's argument is that Reuven is willing to sacrifice his two children, but Yaakov is saying, listen, I love his children. They're my grandchildren. It seems kind of obvious, this point in Rashi. It's very obvious that Reuven really saying that he's willing to kill his children, to kill his two sons, in order, if he doesn't bring Binyamin back? And the breakdown of it seems very obvious. It seems very, very, very simple. So why didn't Reuven see this? Reuven was he was smart, he was intelligent, he was one of the Shvatim, he was a leader amongst the Shvatim. So why doesn't he see that this argument could be easily refuted by Yaakov? So we really have to get a deeper insight into the nature of the argument of Reuven and the breakdown of this argument, because from a factual standpoint and from a simple standpoint, the Medrash doesn't really make sense. It just seems too obvious and too simple. So what's going on behind the scenes over here? And what's his motivation and what's Yaakov's reason for rejecting Reuven's argument? Okay, let's keep that question. We'll keep that question. And if anybody has an idea or they want to share an answer, please share the answer. But let's look at the Ramban. The Ramban, he gives a little bit of a different idea than Rashi, but I think it'll tie into Rashi in the end. If we look at number 3 in the Ramban, he says, "Eshnei banai tamis, kibel ala ba'ala lahaviol aviv." This was a type of shvua. It was a type of he's swearing to bring Binyamin back. Ki amar lo eshnei banai tamis. Bios, he's saying that my two children, my two boys, will be killed. Bios anshcha alai imlo ashivenu elecha. Your onesh will be upon me, meaning Yaakov's onesh will be upon me if I don't bring Binyamin back. V'hu ke'inyan masha amar Yehuda. And this is very similar to what Yehuda said. V'chatasi lecha kol hayomim. Later on, Yehuda makes an argument, and he's successful in convincing Yaakov to bring Binyamin down to Mitzrayim. He says, V'chatasi lecha kol hayomim, that if I don't bring him back, I'll be a sinner to you for all of my days, for all the days. So what's the difference between Reuven's argument? The Ramban's pointing out that they're very similar. Reuven is accepting a harsh, decree if he doesn't bring Binyamin back, and Yehuda is also. So what exactly is the difference between the nature of the arguments? The Omar, Eshnei Banai, Vehema Yu'ar Ba'a. Why does he say my two boys? He had four boys. Lemor Tachas Echad Mibanecha Yeh HaKafel Bevnei. He was saying to Yaakov that for one of your children, two of my children are instead of one of your children. So Binyamin was worth the value of two of Reuven's boys. Also, what does that mean? What does it mean that Reuven is putting a value on his children and he's equaling or he's equating it to the value of Binyamin? It's very odd. V'hinei Yaakov, what happened? V'hinei Yaakov lo batach b'Reuven kasher batach b'Yehuda. Their arguments were somewhat similar, but for some reason Yaakov, he didn't trust Reuven the way he trusted Yehuda. Ki Yehuda gavar be'echav. One reason he gives is that Yehuda was a better leader than Reuven. The other brothers actually listened to Yehuda more so than Reuven. The ode, where do you see that? The case of that is in selling Yosef. Reuven, he didn't want to sell Yosef. He wanted to put him in the boar. But Yehuda, he's the one who was responsible for selling Yosef. And you see the brothers listen to Yehuda. So Yehuda had more power over his brothers. The ode, and furthermore, ki Reuven kvar pasha ba'aviv v'lo yiftach bo. Reuven had already erred with regard to his father, and his father didn't trust him. Where was that error? The error was with Bilhah, when he switched the bed of Leah with Bilhah's, and that was a chait on the part of Reuven. He should have never been involved. And I give a different shir on that, and we'll try to bring those ideas back to light. So that's the second reason. One is because Reuven wasn't as good of a leader as Yehuda, and the other reason that he's given is that Yaakov didn't trust Reuven because of what he had done. The problem with that is that Reuven had done tshuva. So why exactly did Yaakov not trust Reuven? He did do tshuva. He recognized that he did something wrong. So what exactly was the reason why Yaakov wouldn't give him another chance? V'aklal, and this is the last idea. Ki haisa atzas Yehuda tova l'hanicha l'zakein ad sheyichle pas min habayis. The last point the Ramban says is that Yehuda's argument was better timing. That Yehuda's argument was at the point where they had no food left and their only option was to go to Mitzrayim. But Reuven, he's preempting it. Ki az yishama, or az yishma. At that point, Yaakov would listen. V'hu masha amar lo v'nechiev lo namos gam anachtu kam tapenu. So another difference he's giving between Yehuda's argument and Reuven is the timing. Reuven is preemptively arguing to bring down Binyamin before they run out of food. Whereas Yehuda, no, his timing was at the very end, right when they're running out of food. So why is that significant? Why is it significant? Why did Reuven time it out earlier as opposed to Yehuda? And why is that a significant factor in terms of deciding who to trust and who to entrust Binyamin's life with? So those are all the questions on the Ramban and Rashi we had a question on. So once again, let me just review. Question on Rashi was that the Medrash seems to be simple. What is Reuven's argument? I'll kill my two children. And Yaakov says, he's a shota. He thinks that I don't care about his children, but they're my grandchildren. Of course I don't want them to die. So what did Reuven not know this? And why is Reuven willing to sacrifice his two children? And then you have the Ramban, and the Ramban's mentioning that there's a similarity between Reuven's argument and Yehuda's, but there are other differences in the timing of the argument, and Reuven's leadership qualities, and also because Reuven had already had a mistake in the past towards his father, and he wouldn't trust him. So why are these so significant that Yaakov should not trust Reuven, and yet he trusts Yehuda? Okay, so those are all the questions. Anybody have a possibility at this point? I just want to stop here and let the woman on the phone line. Anybody? If anybody has anything. Okay, so there's one.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. I know it takes time to pull the mute button off, so that's why. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. What did he do again with Bilhah? Sorry.
Over there, it seems from the Torah that he slept with Bilhah, but I think the way the Rishonim explain it is that he was upset that Yaakov had put Bilhah's bed in his tent when Rachel had died, and he thought that it was a bizayon to his mother, to Leah. So he took Bilhah's bed out and he put Leah's bed in Yaakov's tent. And he was trying to tell Yaakov, basically control Yaakov in that way, and he was sticking up for his mother, and that was his chait. And we explained that, I gave a different shir on that, that he was confusing his personal emotions with the betterment of Klal Yisrael. I think that was what the nature of the shir was. But that was his...
Sorry, what was the last thing? You said he was confusing his what? Sorry.
His personal feelings towards his mother with the effects on Klal Yisrael over there. Reuven, he confused his personal feelings that he didn't like the fact that his mother was being degraded, but he ended up putting it in the framework of an argument for the betterment of Klal Yisrael, that it would be bad for Klal Yisrael if Leah was insulted. But it really stemmed from a personal argument, a personal feeling. I think that's what we said over there.
So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure how this works in, but obviously Yaakov identified that. Well, obviously that's fault identified with him, and that's probably why he didn't trust him.
That what? Say it again.
It said obviously. It's not strange for people to not necessarily trust him if they think that he's confused. If you're saying that a part of his nature is maybe to confuse his own emotions and put it into the framework of thinking that it's better for Klal Yisrael, if he keeps doing that.
Well, yes, I agree with you, but he did do tshuva after that incident. In fact, the Medrash says in last week's Parsha, when they were selling Yosef, where was Reuven? So one pshat or one Medrash is that he was in Tinus. He was in fasting, and he was doing tshuva for the fact that he had done this sin towards Yaakov. So he was involved in tshuva, although we'll see later on as the shir progresses that he did a better tshuva as a result of this, but he had done a level of tshuva at this point, and I would, the question is, Yaakov should have trusted him because of the fact that he had worked on himself, and he had done tshuva. So understand, but I think there's something in the argument itself of Reuven that kind of tips off Yaakov to what the problem is, what the problem going on here. And we asked a lot of questions on the Ramban's idea of all these secondary reasons. Okay. So look at number four. I saw this nice idea, a nice shot by the Toldos Yitzchak, And it's the last source that we're going to read before we answer the nature of Reuven's argument and why it was rejected. If you read at number 4, Ashnei Banai Tamis, Zed Tipshus Gedola, this is very foolish. V'chi Yaakov Yarog Anashim, is Yaakov going to kill men? V'chol Shekin Bnei Banav, is he going to kill his grandchildren? V'chol Shekin Shelo Chatu, they didn't do anything wrong. V'af Reuven Lo Chata, Sh'im Lo Yivienu Haya Anas. Reuven himself, he wouldn't be a chote if he didn't bring back Binyamin, it would be out of his control. Shibiritsono Hayam Mevilov, if he really wanted to do the right thing. So what's going on here? Same questions that we're asking, he's asking. Hatshuva Sha'amar Osishi Kaltem Yosef Enenu Vishimon Enenu Ves Binyamin Tikachu Alai Yuchulana. He says that all these things have happened to me in the Pasuk. Yaakov says this, Uva Amru Alai Yuchulana. In saying that, Mora Shidaito Sha'in Bana Mitstarfim Laido Chilu Smechimba. What was implied in Yaakov's statement is that the brothers didn't share in his sense of tsar, his sense of sorrow. Yaakov was expressing, Alaya Yuchlana, it only affects me, it doesn't affect you. So what was Reuven's argument? Lahoros Reuven li Yaakov she'ino kain, in order for Reuven to tell Yaakov that that's not the case, Amar shnei banai tamis. He's saying that my two boys will be killed. Lefisha tshuvas Yaakov lezeh, ro'i shetiyeh v'chibanechahim v'lo banai la'ashmisam. And Yaakov's tshuva was proper in answering Reuven. Are they not my grandchildren that you should kill them and they should be guilty? So Reuven had a counter argument, though the Torah doesn't say it. His counter argument would be El Aviv v'chibanechahim Yosef Shimon v'Binyamin v'lo achinu. Are they not my brothers, Yosef, Shimon, and Binyamin? V'halo anu mitzdarim mitzarim Yoser me'ata albini. That I am pained more so about my brothers than I am about my own children. She yoser korva hi ha'achim elu im elu shehem rishon berishon miyakov im bnei banav shehem rishon b'sheni. He's saying that my love of my brothers, Reuven saying my love of my brothers is more so than Yaakov's love of his grandchildren. So he's just trying, according to the Tosfos Yitzchak, Reuven is trying to show Yaakov that he loved Shimon and Binyamin. And he even loved them more than Yaakov thought that they loved him. So that's his counter-argument. But the Torah never expresses Reuven's counter-argument. And the question still remains, if that were the case, if that is a good argument, why again does Yaakov reject Reuven's argument, his argument? Okay, so those are the questions. So let's try to answer it. So I think the answer lies in the nature of his argument. He says, "In Shnei Banai Thomas." He's saying if I don't bring Binyamin back, then my two children will be killed. And Yaakov, he points out, no, that I'm not going to trust you. Why? Because his brother died and he's left alone. And what will happen? I will go to the grave in sorrow. So what's going on here? What's this back and forth? So all the Midrashim are bringing out one concept in my mind. That concept is that Reuven, he looked at the potential loss of Binyamin as a personal loss. He's looking at it as a personal loss, that if Binyamin's not brought back, then Yaakov will be gone forever. He won't be able to deal with the sorrow. And all the arguments being made by the Tolos Yitzchak, for example, he's saying that Reuven's argument was that I love my brother just as much as you would, or even more than you would love, you know, my children. Or the fact that he's mistiming this whole event and the whole question, or before when he says in Rashi, when he says v'chibanavhem v'lobana, Yaakov's rejection, what's going on there? See, Reuven was trying to, he understood this as being a personal loss. If Binyamin weren't brought back, then Yaakov would be so upset, he would be so distraught because he would lose another child, a child that he loved. But what Yaakov is saying back, that Reuven, he didn't understand the nature of the loss of Binyamin. It wouldn't just be that if Binyamin were lost, that Yaakov would be upset and that he would be in sorrow and he wouldn't be able to deal with it. But something deeper would happen. What would happen would be that the whole Klal Yisrael, the whole potential for the Shvatim to exist would be gone. See, without Yosef, they still continued on. They still had a potential to exist. And the reason why they had a potential to exist is because they still had representation of all the Imahos and the Shvatim. You still had Binyamin that was there. You had all the other brothers. And they could still persist and they can continue on with the philosophy of Judaism. But Yaakov, he understood that if something happened to Binyamin and there was no children of Rachel represented in the Shvatim would fall apart. And there would be no Shiftei Ka. there would be no existence of the religion beyond this point. And that's the rejection. That's why he says, "V'horatem esivasi b'yagon sha'ola." It's not an idea in just personal grief, but it's also an idea that his mission, Yaakov's mission, which was to ensure and facilitate the continuance of the philosophy through the Shvatim, it would fail. He would fail, and therefore he says, "V'horatem esivasi b'yagon sha'ola," that even in the afterlife, he would it would be a failure, and he would have failed in his mission. So that's what's going on here, the back and forth between Reuven and Yaakov. Reuven is, he's in the expression that he's making, and in the nature of the Allah that he's making, he's showing Yaakov that he sees this as a personal loss, as a devastating personal loss. And Yaakov's response is no, he doesn't trust Reuven, because he understood that Reuven, he didn't have the proper perspective of the loss of Binyamin. He didn't understand that Binyamin's loss would mean the destruction of Klal Yisrael, and thereby it would also be the destruction of Yaakov, because Yaakov would have failed in his mission. And that's what's going on here. And that explains a lot of the questions that we had. In Rashi, what does it mean that Yaakov's response was, "Do I not love his children?" He's showing Reuven that it's not about personal love. Reuven is putting it in the framework of love, and Yaakov is saying that it doesn't make sense. It's not an idea in personal love. It's an idea also in the destruction of Klal Yisrael. And that's how he's rejecting Reuven. And why is Reuven early? What's the difference between Reuven and Yehuda? We're going to get to Yehuda's argument a little bit in more detail. But Reuven, his timing of the argument and the fact that before he had sinned to Yaakov, Yaakov sensed the same flaw still existed somewhat in Reuven. That he was still, as Debbie said, he was still motivated by personal emotions. And he didn't see the potential of Klal Yisrael's demise as a result of this story. And the fact that he does this before and early, it also shows you that he was emotional in the sense that he wanted to convince Yaakov. He wanted to show Yaakov about the nature of his love, but it wasn't about that. It wasn't just about your love for Binyamin. It's about the idea, the recognition of the importance of bringing Binyamin back for the future of Klal Yisrael. And that was the difference between Reuven and Yaakov. Okay, any questions? Does it make sense? Anybody want me to explain it again? Okay, great. So let's go on. I want to understand Yehuda's argument and then this crazy Gemara about Yehuda's bones rolling. But I think with this answer to Reuven, we can understand Yehuda's argument a little bit better. So let's look at number 5. I'm going to read through the Pesukim. It says, V'hara'ov kaved ba'aretz. The famine was very strong. V'ahi kasher kilu le'acholos ha'shever asher yivu m'mitrayim b'yomar le'hem avihem shuvu shivu lana me'at ochel. When it got really bad, Yaakov said, you have to go get food from Mitzrayim. Vayomrei lov Yehuda lemor, ha'ed ha'ed banu ha'ish lemor, lo siru fanai b'ltiachichem etuchem. Yehuda says back to Yaakov, we can't go back there unless we bring Binyamin with us. Im yeshcha mishaleach es achinu itanu nerdav nishbaralcha ochel, if you let us take Binyamin and you let us send Binyamin with us, then we'll go down and we'll bring back food. Ve'im eincha mishaleach, then we're not going to go because Yosef said, you know, Binyamin has to come down. He goes back to the question of why did you tell him in the first place? Fine. So the response is that we didn't know that he was going to ask us this. Okay, look in Ches. This is the key. Vayomer Yehuda Yisrael Aviv Shilcha Nar Iti V'nakuma V'nelcha V'nechiev Lonamus Gam Anachnu Gam Ata Gam Tapenu. Yehuda steps up and he says to his father Yaakov, "Send the youth, the lad, with me, and we'll live, and he won't die, and everything will be good, and you know, and both we, you, and also our young children." Anochi Ervenu Miyadi Tevakshenu Imlo Haviyosiv Elecha V'tzakti V'fanecha V'chatasi Lecha Kol Hayamim. I will guarantee him from my hand, you can demand me. If I do not bring him to you and stand him up before you, I will have sinned against you forever. For had we not tarried, we would have been returned twice already. Okay, so Yehuda is making an argument, and what ends up happening is that Yaakov accepts this argument. So what's the difference between Yehuda and Reuven's arguments? Let's look at number 6 in Rashi. In number 6, Rashi, in Ches, look at the second line, V'lo namos, bara'av. He says to Yaakov, V'nechye v'lo namos, we won't die bara'av. Binyamin, safek yitpas, safek lo yispas. V'anu kolonu mesim bara'av, im lo nelech, mutav shetaniach asa safek, v'tispos es avada. He's saying, listen, Binyamin, it's a suffix, it's a doubt whether he'll come back or not, but us, we'll all die in famine if we don't go down. Is it better, mutav shetaniach as a suffix, v'tispos as a vadai? Is it not better that we accept the suffix and go along with the suffix than accepting the vadai, that we'll all die? Barav? So what's he doing to Yaakov? He's putting Yaakov in a situation where he has to accept the fact that Klal Yisrael will be the demise of Klal Yisrael will happen whether or not Binyamin goes down. If Binyamin doesn't go down, it'll happen no matter what. So you might as well let Binyamin go down. So Yehuda understood, in the nature of Yehuda's argument, he understood that what Yaakov's concern was, that Yaakov was concerned that the existence of Klal Yisrael will be threatened by Binyamin not coming back. And Yehuda's saying back to Yaakov, what do you mean? If you don't send him down, the existence of Klal Yisrael is threatened. So he's forcing Yaakov to make this decision. And what happens? How does he convince him? He says, "Vitzaktiv l'fanecha," look at Rashi, "im shelo avienu elecha meis ki im chai," I'm going to bring him alive, "v'chatasi l'cha kol yamim l'olam haba," that I will be a chote for all of days, even l'olam haba. So what does that mean? What does that mean that he's saying I will be a chote even l'olam haba? It means that Yehuda, unlike Reuven, he understood that if Binyamin were to not come back and Klal Yisrael would be destroyed, he would have responsibility for that. And that would destroy not only Klal Yisrael, but it would destroy Yehuda. Yehuda's chance for existence beyond this life would be destroyed if he was responsible for the destruction of Klal Yisrael. So we see exact opposite approaches between Reuven and Yehuda. On the one hand, Reuven is looking at it in a personal standpoint. He's looking at it as a reflection of his love. But on the other hand, Yehuda, he understands that if Binyamin's not brought back, then the demise of Klal Yisrael is imminent. And therefore, he tries to force Yaakov into recognizing that. And he also is willing to accept responsibility for that. Okay? Any questions? Thoughts? Debbie? We're good? All right. Excellent. All right, let's go on. One last point in the share. So we have a build up here. We have Reuven's argument. It was too focused on the personal love, and Yaakov was more concerned about the demise of Klal Yisrael. And then you have Yehuda, where he recognizes that. But now we have this strange Gemara. The Gemara says, look at number 7. I'm going to read the Gemara inside. Just give me 1 second. Number 7. It says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Nidoy al tanai tsar chafara. If a person makes a ban on himself conditionally, it requires nullification. What does that mean? If a person says that if I don't do something, I will be ostracized, so even if you do it, even if it's fulfilled, you still have to get hafara. You still have to go to a beis din, and you have to undo this condition. Where do we learn this from? Minalan. From where do we learn this? Meyehuda, from Yehuda. Im dichsiv, im lo habiyosiv elecha. Yehuda says, if I'm not going to bring him back, v'chatasi l'cha kol yomim, that he will be a sinner for all of days, meaning he will be a nidoy, he will be ostracized. And what happens? V'amr of Shmuel bar Nachmini, amr of Yonasan, my dechsev, what is the meaning of that which is written? Reuven v'al yamos, yechi Reuven v'al yamos v'zos liyuda, may Reuven live and not die, and this is for Yehuda. Kol osan mem shana shayu Yisrael ba'midbar. All 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, atzmosav shel Yehuda hayu megulgalan ba'aron. The bones of Yehuda, they were rolling in his coffin. Ad she'amad Moshe, Moshe stands up, and he's bikesh alav rachamim. He asks for forgiveness for Yehuda. Amar lefanav, he says before Hashem, mi garam l'Reuven sheyoda, who caused Reuven to publicly announce that he had sinned by Bilha? Who was that? It was Yehuda. Vizos liHuda. When Yehuda acknowledged that he sinned by Tamar, it caused Reuven to acknowledge that he sinned as well by Bilha, and he announced it in public. Shema Hashem kol Yehuda, hearken Hashem to the voice of Yehuda, al evrei l'shafa. What happened? His limbs entered into his joints. This is a strange Gemara. The Gemara is saying that because Yehuda, he didn't nullify his Tanai, he said that he was going to be in Nidoy if he didn't bring Binyamin back. Because of that, all 40 years that he was in the Midbar, his bones were rolling around until Moshe was Mevakesh Rachamim. Because of Yehuda's responsibility for Reuven doing tshuva, therefore his joints came back into his limbs and his bones stopped rolling. Now what is going on here? What does it mean that his bones are rolling? How do we explain this Medrash? It's very hard to understand from a literal standpoint. And what exactly did Yehuda do wrong in his argument? We just said that Yehuda's argument convinced Yaakov. He's recognizing the demise and the destruction of Klal Yisrael. So what did he do wrong? It sounds like he did something wrong here, that he didn't nullify his vow. So what's the underlying theme of this medrash, and what did he do wrong, and how do we explain the rolling of bones and Moshe Rabbeinu? He's Mispala. What is this? What's going on here? Okay, so let's try to explain that. Okay, so we said before that Yehuda, his argument was that he was willing to accept, or he was saying to Yaakov, I understand that if Binyamin's not brought back, that Klal Yisrael is at risk and they're threatened. And he understood that. Now, what does it mean that a nidoy al tanai tsar chafara? And what did Yehuda do wrong here? See, Yehuda, he was willing to accept that as a possibility. He was willing to accept the fact that Binyamin wouldn't be brought back, and he's even mentioning it, and he's willing to accept the fact that he'd be responsible, and the result of that would be that he would not be part of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael would be destroyed, and he would be responsible for that destruction. Now, why would you have to be mefar that? Why would you have to nullify that? Because a person normally has to, when do you nullify nedarim? We usually nullify neder when we understand that we can't keep to it. For example, if a person makes a neder that they want to stop drinking alcohol, and then they realize that they can't stop drinking alcohol, they're an alcoholic. So you have to nullify the neder that you made because you recognize and you regret making the neder in the first place. You recognize that you couldn't have really kept to it. It was too harsh. And that's the way that you, and that's what you do when you make a neder that you can't keep. You have to go to a beis din and you have to be made for it. So what's the flaw here? See, Yehuda, in saying this to Yaakov, it's true. What he said was true, and what he said was convincing to Yaakov, but he shouldn't have been able to accept that as a reality. He shouldn't have been able to, afterwards, he should have been made for it. It means that he should have known that he wouldn't have been able to keep to it. He wouldn't have been able to live with himself. He wouldn't have been able to tolerate the lack of existence of Klal Yisrael. And the fact that Yehuda, he doesn't nullify this nidoy al tanai, it means that he's accepting it in his mind. He's giving it a reality. And the fact that he could tolerate this was a flaw on the part of Yehuda. And that explains also what's the rolling of the bones, and then the bones end up coming back into place, and all 40 years. See, for 40 years in the desert, where the Jewish people were vulnerable to the outside, they were wandering in the desert, they had an uneasy feeling towards Yehuda. Why? Because Yehuda, he was able to tolerate their destruction. And in the desert, where the Jews were vulnerable, they could not look at Yehuda properly. They could not see Yehuda as a tzaddik he was because of the fact that he accepted and he made a comment to Yaakov that there's a potential for Klal Yisrael to not exist and that he would be responsible, and he was willing to accept that. Now, for Klal Yisrael itself, that was very difficult for them. It affected their view of Yehuda. And how does Moshe save Yehuda's bones, or save the perception of Klal Yisrael of Yehuda? By making reference to the fact that Yehuda really saved Reuven. If not for Yehuda, Reuven would be discounted from the Shvatim. If not for Yehuda, Reuven would have never done Shuvah. So the real idea behind this Medrash is it's a very deep idea. On the one hand, Yehuda's argument was convincing. He was able to see that Klal Yisrael would be threatened, if not for Binyamin being brought back. But on the other hand, in doing so, he was able to tolerate a crazy possibility. He's able to tolerate the destruction of the Shvatim. And he should have nullified it. He should have recognized that he couldn't tolerate it, that it wouldn't be possible for him to live with himself, and that he couldn't tolerate it. And the fact that he doesn't is a flaw on his part. And that flaw affected Klal Yisrael's perception of him until they go into Eretz Yisrael, until they're ready to settle down. They lack the vulnerability. And also, this reference to Reuven, they had to understand that Yehuda was also responsible for Reuven's survival and Reuven's existence as part of the Shvatim. Okay? Does that make sense?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was he, by telling Yaakov that he was going to go down and if he failed and he would take responsibility, was it because he was not in reality, because really he wouldn't be able to accept that if that would happen, or he really would have been able to, and that was his fate?
Well, that was the chay. That's what I'm saying. On the one hand, he made the right argument. He understood that the only way, or the true reality would be if Binyamin wouldn't come back, that Klal Yisrael would be destroyed. But on the other hand, he should have...
Which is true. I mean, he was saying the truth.
It is true, right. It is true. Right. But he should have been Mefar. The Gemara is saying he wasn't Mefar the Nidoy al-Tanai. He should have gone to, like, a Neder, that you're Mefar, that you go to a Beis Din.
Yeah, so you may answer the whole thing.
Yeah, after exactly. After, exactly.
Day, then he after, could have done
Exactly. After the whole thing happened, he should have reflected back on the situation, and there should have been an uneasiness on his part. He should have recognized that he really couldn't tolerate that, and that it wouldn't be, even though he's saying it to Yaakov to convince Yaakov, there should have been a part of him that couldn't tolerate it. How could I tolerate, you know, a lack of, or a destruction of the nation? So that was the problem here, and that's what's going on. That's what it means that his bones, it doesn't mean literally that his bones were rolling, but it means as opposed to the other Shvatim who were at rest and they weren't rolling, the perception of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, that's why it's all 40 years. Their perception of Yehuda was always tainted because they saw Yehuda as accepting their demise, as accepting their lack of existence. And the only way to change Klal Yisrael's perception was there was two parts. One is going into Eretz Yisrael, because now they're not vulnerable, they're more established, there's more kfias. And the other is recognizing that Yehuda was responsible for the existence of Klal Yisrael in the sense that he allowed Yehuda to, or he was the one responsible for Reuven's tshuva, and if not for that, Reuven may have been left out. That's what the pasuk says, Yechi Reuven v'alyamos. That Reuven lives and he doesn't die, v'zos Yehuda. It means that Yehuda was responsible for Reuven's existence as part of the Shvatim. And if Reuven had not been modeh Barabim, he would have been out. He would not have been part of the Shvatim. So
the fact that he brought Binyamin back also. That's another reason.
That's also true. That is also true. But you're right. I mean, why doesn't Moshe reference that? It's a good question. That's also true. He was responsible.
What else did he have said to Yaakov? I mean, that was the thing that got Yaakov to agree.
That's
so
it.
No,
the point, I'm not saying that he did anything wrong in the argument. It means after the fact. After the argument, it sounds like Yehuda was still willing to accept it as a reality. That it wasn't an intolerable possibility in his mind. And that's the idea of nullifying a neder. You nullify a neder when you realize that you can't keep it. So that even though that it turned out that he fulfilled this nidoy al tanai, he fulfilled the tanai, but why should you be made for it? Because you have to recognize that had it gone the other way, you wouldn't have been able to accept it, and it would be too harsh. So he made the right argument, he made the right statement, but after the fact, he should have been uneasy. He should have recognized that he couldn't tolerate it, that there's something.
Is that a general rule though? When somebody makes the shvua, that even if they fulfill it.
It's only by this case nidui al tanai. It's actually halacha in the Rambam. The Rambam says that nidui al tanai tzar chafara. That if you say that I'm going to be menada, I'm going to be ostracized al tanai if I do something or I don't do something. So yeah, you have to be made for it. It's actually real halacha. It's only in a case. I think that to clarify, it's only in a case where you can't control the outcome, like Binyamin over here. The fact is that it was out of his hands. So when it's out of your hands, that's the situation that you have to be made for. But if it's in your hands completely, then you don't have to be. But it really is the halacha. Okay? There's a second part to the Gemara. The Gemara also goes on, and it says, one second, where was I? All Ivrei L'Shafa, fine. Lo hava ka ma'ayli le l'misivasa d'rakia. So when Yehuda went into the Beis Din, not the Beis Din, the yeshiva, the heavenly academy, it says he wasn't accepted. They wouldn't admit him into Olam Haba. Vel amo tivienu, and you shall bring him to the people. Lo hava ka yada l'mishkal mitrach b'shmaita b'hadei rabbanan. He wasn't able to go back and forth. So Moshe is making an argument that Yehuda should be admitted into the yeshiva shalmala, and he wasn't able to go back and forth with the chachamim. And Moshe says yadav rav lo. He says no. May his hands contend for him. He's trying to bolster Yehuda's ability to argue Torah. Lo hava yada lefruke kushya. He did not know how to solve a difficulty. Ve'ezer mitzarav tiyah. This is the end of the Gemara. And you shall be a help against his adversaries. That Moshe is saying that Yehuda should be able to argue back to the Chachamim in Olam Haba. So now this is the second part of the Gemara. The Gemara is saying that Yehuda also, he needed help to get into the Yeshiva Shomala. So how do we explain this? Also, I think it's similar to the concept that we said before. On the one hand, that Klal Yisrael's perception of Yehuda was affected by his ability to accept their demise, but also it affected Yehuda's ability to, it affected his appreciation of the soul. See, if Yehuda really understood the eternal nature of the soul and the value of the soul, he would have nullified his nidoy. He would have gone after the fact, he would have recognized that he couldn't tolerate it. He couldn't tolerate it because he wouldn't be able to tolerate an existence apart from Olam Haba, apart from being involved in Chachma, his soul being involved in Yedias Hashem. And the fact that he wasn't Mefar and he's willing to accept it also reflects back on Yehuda that he had a lack of value of his Tel Melukim. And that's the idea over here I'm not sure exactly what the nature of the tefillah was, but the tefillah of Moshe is that Yehuda was a very capable person. He had a very advanced soul, a very advanced mind. And therefore, although they're not exactly the same thing, but Yehuda had a very advanced soul. And therefore, Moshe is saying that despite the fact that Yehuda had a lack of value of this of his soul and being able to accept his own demise if this didn't happen, but nevertheless he needs the tefillah of Moshe in order to be admitted into the yeshiva shalmala, whatever that means. It means that he needed some type of tefillah, or some type of tefillah was necessary in order for this flaw to be. It was recognized by Moshe in order for this flaw to be rectified. I'm not exactly sure at the end of the Gemara, but I do see this idea that on the one hand, he should have been Mefar because he shouldn't have accepted the destruction of Klal Yisrael. And also the other reason is that he should have had more value of his soul in terms of Olam Haba. And the fact that he was able to tolerate his soul not existing in Olam Haba was a flaw on the part of Yehuda. So it's similar. So that's where I want to really end the share tonight. I had a couple more sources, but I think this, we're good for tonight, for the share tonight. So let me just summarize the main points of the share. There's really three main points. One is Reuven's argument. Reuven's argument was tied to understanding the loss of Binyamin in a personal sense, and Yaakov was trying to show Reuven. He rejected Reuven because he didn't trust him because of the fact that he didn't understand the nature and the severity of the Binyamin not coming back. And therefore, he didn't trust Reuven. But Yehuda, on the other hand, his argument is different. His argument is accepting the value of Binyamin to the future of the nation. And if Binyamin didn't exist, the nation couldn't exist as well. But on the other hand, the Gemara is saying that after the fact, he should have nullified his Nido El Tanai. He should have recognized, or he should have been uneasy with the possibility of that happening. He shouldn't have been able to accept it as a reality. And even though he made the right argument to Yaakov, the fact that afterwards he was still willing to accept it as a possibility, it affected the perception of Klal Yisrael of him. And also, it reflected on the value of his soul, that he was willing to accept, an eternal existence away from Olam Haba in making the argument, and he wasn't made for it. He didn't nullify this as a possibility. So both those reflected on a very subtle flaw that Yehuda had. Okay, so that's really the shiur tonight on this week's parsha on Parshas Miketz. I know it's kind of a deep idea, but I think that it flowed from Reuven to Yehuda, and then this Gemara about Yehuda's bones rolling. Does anybody have any questions? Any other questions? All right, so everybody have a happy Hanukkah and enjoy the Chag and have a good Shabbos.